Welcome to Reconstructed Faith, a podcast where we talk about truth you can build your life on. We hope to dive into the hard conversations of life and faith and seek out reasonable, substantive answers. My name is Colson Lechner, and I'm joined by Chris Legg and Bryn Starnes. This is Reconstructed Faith. Well, welcome back to the Reconstructed Faith podcast. My name is Colson Lechner, and I'm here with my friends Chris and Bryn, my partners in crime, if you will, not in real crime. I thought about just leaving it out, and I was like, I've done it up to now. I just got to do it.
I think it's okay.
Yeah, that's great. So that being said, guys, it is we're recording this on September 22nd. We live in a very interesting political climate, as we have, you know, in the past couple of years.
Yes.
But given what happened on September 10th with the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and then everything that's happened from then, we're taking a moment just to maybe gather our thoughts, get together, because Chris has posted an article. He's preached twice since then. Mm-hmm. Bryn, you've also had time to think about some of these things. And so we have kind of some thoughts that we want to get through. Chris, can I throw it over to you to just give us a little bit of a timeline between that tragedy and where we are right now?
Yeah.
And then we can kind of jump into the conversation.
So I think it was September 10th. The day before September 11th, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that's the day that Charlie Kirk, who, depending on your perspective, was either primarily a political figure with a lot of religious ties or primarily a religious figure with a lot of political ties. And we'll talk about that in a minute, because that's, I think there's an interesting, you know, and I'm actually going to comment on it now. I think it's worthwhile. So one of the things that's interesting about this is, if y'all have probably known, you know, he started with the old, I'm going to put out a little table at a college campus with a poster board on it that says something, prove me wrong. He makes a claim and then prove me wrong. And that was how he started, was just this guy who would just go do that and then record himself, and slowly but surely those built. And here's what's wild. So you guys have both, this is what struck me. Both of you have seen me do similar things either in church settings. And I've actually gotten to do it once or twice at a college where I was stood up in front of the entire assembly at a college, anyone who wanted to be there, and you could ask any questions. The students could ask any questions they want to ask. So I'm curious, what are the kind of topics when you guys have seen me do that, whether it's with a Christian audience or whatever, what have you seen? Like what kind of questions do you remember me getting?
You getting like the Q&A's?
Yeah, and when I do a Q&A, whether it's at a church or at a youth group or students or college or anything.
I mean, lots and lots. Also way deeper than we ever expect when it comes to students, which is awesome.
Yes.
I mean, usually the problem of evil and suffering.
Okay. Deeply theological topics. Okay, what else?
Always about sexuality.
Yep.
All the questions around sexuality. And then I always remember you always get those, like, what about aliens type questions, or like, what about dinosaurs? Not to equate aliens and dinosaurs, but like, you know,
mythical creatures.
Those like maybe less directly applicable to our spiritual life.
So here's what struck me. I mean, when you see me do that, I get Bible questions. Mm-hmm. I get theology questions. I get therapy questions. I get political questions. And so when you open up we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about, it turns out people's lives are those things all kind of mixed in. You're going to be talking about politics, and you're going to be talking about religion and theology and Bible and therapy and practical application. Like, that's what's going to happen. And I think what's happened because of that, it struck me, because I've been in some conversations with my son recently over the mixture of faith and politics. And what struck me was, I think anyone, if you're going to initiate the talk and then deliver a talk and sit down, then I think you could easily be responsible for the mixing of politics and faith in an unhealthy way. But if you're just going to put a mic out and let people ask about whatever they want to ask, unless you're just going to say, well, that's a political topic. I'm not going to talk about that. Or, well, that's a religious topic. I'm not going to talk about that. And of course, there are a lot of topics that do, the two things do speak to one another. Any moral issue is going to speak, is going to have a political edge. And so what strikes me is one of the things that Charlie Kirk represented throughout his work was this integration of all of these topics because, and I think largely because of the format, he's inviting, just puts out a microphone and inviting, mm-hmm. he gives even his quote opponents a microphone. In fact, you get to come to the mic first if you disagree. So there's a whole, you know, 1,000 students there. The ones who disagree get the mic first, not the ones who agree. And so anyway, there's just a big piece of that struck me as interesting that when you let people choose, they will integrate them. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, you either need to, you have to say, no, I'm refusing to integrate them, which I think just silences you immediately. Or you have to integrate them also in your responses. So anyway, so he was assassinated. Within a few days, they had found, caught, captured the young man who had killed him, who had assassinated him. I mean, there will always be, as there is anytime there's a political assassination, there will always be conspiracies and, that's unavoidable. I've not seen any good evidence to indicate it's anything other than this young man went and got the rifle and shot him. And there's nothing supernatural. You know, this is not JFK. He wasn't shooting at a target, moving away from him in a convertible in a car, which would require a Marine sniper to have a shot. This is a guy who's just standing still 150 yards away from a gun. And if you have a scoped rifle, that's not, at least here in East Texas, that's not that big a deal. And so, I think right now the best evidence is that this young man just killed him. And then he gets captured. Then the next big event, we have all these responses you have. And we've not talked about this, but I will tell you on my social media feed, the most impressive thing about this was the response of my social media friends who weren't fans. And it was the first time I've ever seen such a vitriolic, he deserved it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad he's dead type of responses. Like, it was really quite shocking to see the level of I'm glad he's dead. And it wasn't even just the kind of classic victim shaming of, well, he brought it on himself, which is bad enough. But it was just flat out celebration.
Yeah.
And so, like, this was a morally right thing. Like, they believed what the young man did was literally morally right, and that he shouldn't face any consequences for it. And so that was a new level of brokenness that I'd ever seen in my life. And then what we had, was it yesterday afternoon? Was the, for us, where the we memorial. Are right now on the 22nd, the memorial. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to unpack that a little bit here, several
and
hours.
I'm not super familiar with that, but I am familiar with, and I don't know where you're at, Bryn, but I am familiar with kind of that, the social media kind of outcry from both sides and seeing things kind of come out with that, because, you know, you have kind of an extreme on one side talking martyrdom.
Right.
You have an extreme on the other side that's like, man, finally this happened. This is, you know, like you were saying, this man is morally right to do this.
Right.
And it all kind of comes to a head on these social media platforms.
Yes.
Which is wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so anyway.
I have a friend who's a pastor who the first Sunday. So what we did here and what we typically do at South Spring is when there is a national event is there's kind of a moment in most services. That's kind of the most focused in moment. And it's typically as the worship team is kind of leaving the stage and the speaker's coming up on the stage. And the first thing the speaker says is going to be probably the most focused time. And so we do use that time to pray for natural disasters, to pray for, political things that happen, that kind of stuff, whatever it happens to be. We reserve that because it's such an apex moment in the service.
Yeah.
And so we chose to pray for the Kirk family and for our nation on that Sunday during both services during that time. I did get one email later saying that the person was saying, I don't know what I expected, but I was disappointed that we didn't talk more about it. Mm-hmm. And it was very gentle and kind. It was, I don't know what would have, mm-hmm. they admitted, I don't know what I was expecting, but I think I was expecting something more. Mm-hmm. Then a week later, I did get a separate email from someone saying, and it was interesting. They mixed it all in. Like, what is our church's, quote, church's stance on? And they went through a whole list. Homosexuality, LGBTQ issues, DEI issues, wokeness. And they just listed all kinds of like this mixture of moral, ethical, political, all that kind of stuff, topics, and said. Mm-hmm. And so I just responded with, our church has a stance on a couple of those things, but the majority of those things our church does not have a stance on. Mm. Anyway, but but that was it from here. Mm. I had a friend who literally they chose as a church to pray for the nation, but not to mention the Kirks by name in that service right afterwards. And they had someone in the service shouting, like, say his name, say his name. And then they got a lot of blowback that they didn't do more. And so we're seeing that. Yeah. Around the country is that there are some people pushing some of that stuff.
Well, and so then, and we talked about maybe reserving this for later on. I think this is a good enough place as any to bring this up. But so my wife and then she was sending me things like, this is really interesting. And kind of, so Wednesday, the assassination happens.
Right.
Kind of as you progress through the week toward the weekend, there are a lot of posts saying like, hey, I'm going to church this Sunday for the first time in a long time.
Yes.
I'm really interested what the pastor is going to say. Some response that hit kind of Sunday night or Monday is, I went to the church for the first time. The pastor did not talk about it how I want to. I'm never going back to that church.
Right.
Or it's time to find a new church. Or even people posting like kind of polling like, hey, did your pastor mention it?
Right.
The question was, did your pastor mention the Charlie Kirk assassination? And if so, is it like, was it what you were expecting or was it up to what you wanted?
Right.
And so that to me was also like, okay, in the face of these tragedies, how do we think about them as a church, as church leaders? And then what maybe if, you know, if you're listening and you're seeking some sort of guidance as far as like, okay, what would Chris and Brandon Colson, like what would their advice be on how to approach church after this? Or how can I maybe help my friends who are struggling with this? And like, so I guess, I don't know, Bryn, how would you formulate what I'm trying to say as far, because you can read my mind.
Yeah, right. Yeah, totally.
But do you know, I feel like I'm kind of fumbling here, but how would you phrase that? Because I think it's worth talking about, because there is an underlying, like, people are looking for something, but it feels like an interesting cultural thing of like, but
yes.
And by the cultural side of it is like, but if it's not what I want, then I'm going to be mad and I'm going to go find what I want.
Yes.
And so I see something there, but I don't know how to hit it.
Yeah. Well, I think the hard part of this is because, and I mean, before I go into all this, I just want to acknowledge like, this is such a tragedy and we're going to unpack it a lot, but don't hear that we are just, you know, I don't know. I don't want people to hear like we're glossing over the fact that it's such a tragedy and jumping right into it.
Right.
Yeah. But I think it's hard because of a couple things. One is because of it is so closely tied to politics. It feels sticky for a lot of people.
Right.
And it seems like he was a genuine believer, but he also supported a lot of things that some believers politically don't support. And it feels like honoring him significantly, and this is why social media makes this so much more complicated, but it feels like honoring him significantly is also praising the things he stood for. And that's why I think it's probably hard from a church pastoral perspective, because it's like, what exactly are we honoring by mentioning him? And so I feel for pastors who were like, I'm torn to know how to mm-hmm. handle this well.
Right.
But I think you're right in that a couple of pieces to what you're saying, Colson, it's also a dangerous road to walk when you are coming to church expecting something of like, they will mention this issue or that issue, or I'm out. And it's fine to like be concerned about something and want to hear your leadership concerned about it or your leadership grieving it. But I think that's just the mindset is a dangerous road to walk of, and seems very consumeristic of like, or consumerist, of like, I'm coming to church, with my expectations. If they're not met, then I'm out. Like that feels very, you know, cultural, very American in some ways. Mm-hmm. And very, kind of missing,
like very, very
and egocentric.
Yeah, egocentric, I think, is how I interpreted those.
Right. And they may not mean it that way, but it definitely can trend egocentric.
Yeah. Which I feel like,
and so I think that's hard.
Relevant, right? Like
Me,
my truth. I feel like it tracks, at least. I'm not trying to step on people's toes, but I do feel like that's just a commentary that we're noticing. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Anything else on that before we throw it over to Chris?
Well, yeah. And so I think that's just the challenging piece of like, if that was you or you were disappointed by what your pastor did or didn't say, I would just caution. Like, I think it's fine to tell them that and just say like, hey, I wanted to hear you grieve this from stage, or like talk about how culture applies or how the Bible applies to this piece of culture. I think those are healthy. Mm-hmm. Where I would caution is, you know, then how much of this is like us coming into church expecting something and then being like, oh, well, you didn't check the box that I came with, even though it may or may not be important. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what I would say about that. I don't know if there's anything else, Chris.
Yeah, I would, it's, you know, there's something special and unique about stuff like this for sure. When it's a person, people have the connection. It's not as simple as equating it to, coming to church, expecting there to be more hymns. And then there's not, you're like, well, I'm done. Like they should do more hymns than that. One of the things I've encouraged people with, especially when it comes to this talk like of music, that I've said, listen, you have 160, 8 hours a week, 166 of them, you get to listen, you get to pick whatever Spotify channel you want to listen to. Come here and let us lead you and let yourself be shepherded. You don't always have to be the shepherd. This is a situation where you can be led. I think that's a good heart mindset. Now, obviously it has limits because you get the wrong kind of narcissistic, abusive pastor and leadership, and you need to. So this isn't it's never going to be an easy conversation. And I think maybe even just that, like in the email I referenced a minute ago, one of the first lines in the email, it was only like 5 or 6 sentences, was, I know this has got to be hard for the leadership to decide what to do. And what a great attitude to have. And I was offended in no way by that email. Now, it could have been verbalized in a way that would have been offensive, but it wasn't. It was just I'm struggling here. I would have wanted more. I didn't see it, you know, whatever. And so, but I can imagine it would be hard. That attitude is going to be always the healthy, humble attitude. Hey, I'm just experiencing this. I felt this, whatever, whether it's about the music or the air conditioning or the sound system or what the preacher said or didn't say. And I think there's a healthy engagement that can happen there. We always have to be careful putting ourselves in the position of evaluator versus learner, and just be aware of that we want to be there to primarily to learn. That's where we're doing that. And hopefully our pastors, our teachers, our leaders are speaking the truth in love. They aren't that good at that either. None of us are any good at that. And so that's the true maturity, is speaking the truth in love, Ephesians 4. And so I think us saying the pastor's trying probably to do that. And I like the way you said it, Brent. So I think the first step is talk to them about that. Like, help me understand how you made this decision. Like, how does this go? And because a lot of people don't realize, they assume everyone in church agrees with them. And so they don't realize that, I mean, probably, I don't know, have any idea what the numbers are, but I mean, there's a decent percentage of people who come to our church, and I have had a handful who have told me, we come here because We want to hear the Bible taught and taught well and taught faithfully, but we disagree, you know, the husband and wife, we disagree politically. We don't want to go to a church where that's, we just want to study the Bible. And when the Bible speaks to a political issue, we count on you to handle that faithfully. If it doesn't, please don't draw the politics into it. And which again, that's, they're like, we appreciate that that's how you do it. But always that's part of why, honestly, part of why I don't teach topically, that I teach straight through scripture. Going through the book of Isaiah right now, you'll appreciate, Brent, I had someone stop me yesterday and say, you have been so much more bold and even confrontational about the gospel than I've ever seen you before in your preaching. And I'm like, yeah, that's Isaiah. Like that's, I'm telling you, the same thing happened with Luke when we were teaching through some of Jesus's teaching, like you were talking about, people were like, wow, you're getting more preachy. Like, I mean, I don't think I am. I don't think I'm, maybe, I don't know. I could go back and try to watch, but I feel like I'm just trying to present the material as it is presented. And I mean, now we're teaching a prophetic passage in opposition to a king who's not listening to God. I suspect mm-hmm. we all feel a little like our toes are stepped on a little bit more than normal, because we all can identify with that king who sometimes wants to defy God and like, I want to do it my way. And so, so I'm going to read from 2 Timothy 4. And then I want to talk a little bit about this, the tragedy of this, because people, when it is the music, that's bad enough. But imagine when you show up mm-hmm. to church and the organ that your grandfather donated to the church is just not on the stage that Sunday. That's more like what I think people felt on the Sunday morning after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, was that they showed up and their pastor didn't mention it. And to them, it felt very real and very personal, like someone they very knew personal. Had died. Mm-hmm. And because I think one of the things Kirk did well was communicate this sense of, no, I'm here to listen. I'd missed the name listening to the two podcasts this morning about this. And one of them referenced and read from one of Kirk's strongest opponents. Like he described himself as essentially hating him, but he was like, I hated that guy. Mm-hmm. And we were not friends. We fought constantly. He described himself as his arch enemy. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. correct or not, but he described himself that way. And after Kirk had died, he found a letter that Kirk had sent him that he didn't know he'd been sent. So this is a hard-lined, left-leaning guy who hated everything that Kirk taught. And the letters, in the letter, Kirk is saying, hey, I appreciate our dialogue. We need to always remember to be able to disagree with each other without being disagreeable. And mm-hmm. and he's like, and so this guy is going, he wasn't hateful. This isn't a hateful man. This is like this is one of his opponents saying, this is a guy who really did this and really believed this. And I'm going to comment more on that when we're wrapping up probably, but, and people felt that, they really felt that. Mm-hmm. And so it felt like someone close to them had died and we didn't comment on it. It would be like in a little church, if the guy who kind of helped found the church died and no one mentions it, it felt that way, I think, to people. So right. I think that's a lot of what we were seeing that Sunday morning, is it was more than just, hey, you didn't play my favorite song.
Yeah.
It's you didn't mention someone who's very, very special to me.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And for a lot of us in
but
ministry.
You were going to read.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah, I was going to read 2 Timothy. Yeah, you're right. So read 2 Timothy 4. This is Paul writing to his student Timothy, who's the pastor at Ephesus, as I understand it. I charge you in the presence of God in Christ Jesus, who is to judge the living and the dead, and by his appearing and his kingdom, preach the word. Be ready in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, and exhort with complete patience and teaching. For the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions. And will turn away from listening to the truth and wander off into myths. As for you, always be sober-minded, endure suffering, do the work of the evangelist, and fulfill your ministry. It is the tendency of us to go listen to people who make us feel good. And that is not, as Paul is saying to Timothy, that is not always the teacher's role. That's not always the preacher pastor's role. And again, that's why I want to teach straight through the scriptures, because part of that is, I'm not picking the topics that I'm passionate about. I'm picking the top, right. Whatever the passage topic is, that's what, and because half the time, I mean, I'm the one who had to spend, several hours with it this week. And so it's usually beat me up much more by the time I bring it to the church than I can do in 35 or 40 minutes with it on a Sunday morning. Anyway, so I think it is, be patient with the pastors and leaders and teachers as they're trying to figure out what is the appropriate level of integration with someone who, as we're learning more about them, which is why this Sunday I did reference a little bit more, because I had learned more about his faith. Mm-hmm. And so that was, to me, felt very appropriate to comment on, was as we're teaching about the disciples' life, how big his audience was, how many people were listening to him, was not necessarily what I wanted to honor. But what I wanted to honor was someone who apparently was working really hard to be a good husband and a good father and to speak the mm-hmm. truth in love and to be a disciple. I mean, I even love the fact that, mm-hmm. They interviewed Frank Turek on a podcast I listened to, and he was meeting with Frank Turek for a couple of hours every month to be discipled and to learn how to defend his faith better. And that's just, to me, it's like, wow, that's the Christian life. And so he was leading the normal Christian mm-hmm. life. He was just doing it in a way that had a very, very huge impact on the culture. And that's, to me, that's what's impressive. Not the mm-hmm. impact. It's the mm-hmm. faithful Christian life. So I wanted to honor mm-hmm. that, because that was something we were pushing and talking about mm-hmm. in Isaiah. And so anyway, mm-hmm. other thoughts on that? Is that...
No, I have some other thoughts that are related, but they're... I'd rather talk about those at the end.
Okay.
But you said you want to talk about the tragedy for a minute.
Yeah. I think one of the things is this is part of what struck me. And I think William Bennett, who, if you know who William Bennett is, he's one of the most gifted thinkers, I think, in American history. He wrote an article that my wife Ginger sent to me this morning, and I got to glance at it and read through it. It wasn't very long, but this is what struck me. I think he makes a really good point. The feeling that I had was that it does feel like there's a tipping point, and Charlie Kirk kind of represents that tipping point one way or another, which is ironic that his nonprofit was called Turning Point. And everybody, even I've been amazed at how often even like the New York Times podcast, The Daily, unintentionally, one of their people said, this feels like a turning point in America. And the other commentator was like, well, I mean, that is the name of the nonprofit that Jordan Kirk ran. And they're like, oh, that's, yeah, I didn't mean it that way. But like that does feel that way. And I think William Bennett is who has now labeled what the turning point is. And that is, I think Charlie Kirk, was the last person in the world who had any hope that argument could change people's minds. Mm. And so that the last of those has now died. The last person in the world who thought maybe reason and logic and conversation and discussion can improve things is now dead. Mm-hmm. And so there's a person who was trying to reach across from one group to the other. Mm-hmm. And he's now, that is something that our modern culture in America seems unable to tolerate. Mm-hmm. 'Cause he had just as many critics on the right as left at times because he did stuff like this. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that seems,
I mean, it is, sorry, go ahead.
I'm done. Yeah.
Well, I was just saying that is really ironic, because it's like, aside from the tragedy of, someone just dying in such a horrific way, leaving behind a young family, mm-hmm. Part of the tragedy, like you're saying, I had this thought of, it is so ironic in a tragic way that one of his goals was that dialogue across, across party lines and across ideologies. And part of his goal was to, whether or not you agree with his politics, part of his goal was to have cordial, yes, respectful conversations about things that you disagreed with, like you're saying. And from what I understand, the person who shot him was killing him because of ideologies, if that is accurate and not just... like we said, there's a lot of things going around on the internet, but it seems like that's how it's leaning right now.
Right.
We could find out things that say differently. But I think the tragedy of that is, he was in the midst of having conversations about things he disagreed with in a kind way. And the fact that someone like who disagreed with him shot him is like such a visual picture of what you're talking about.
Right.
Of like, yeah, that's like... is that the end? Like, are we incapable of this as a culture? And even, like you were saying earlier, the amount of people who disagree with him politically who are celebrating his death seems to also indicate that. It's like, wow, can we not grieve that someone, you know, was murdered? Whether or not you agree right. with them doesn't, that shouldn't inform whether or not, you know, that shouldn't give you just justification to somehow celebrate their death.
Yes.
And what does that mean?
Right.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but, you know, one of the things that at least on my social media came out was that, you know, where were Republicans, you know, when the state congresswoman or state senator, I can't remember, I think state congresswoman Hortman, when she was killed, mm-hmm. when she was assassinated. And like, where were you guys when that happened? And of course, there's a big mm-hmm. difference between a, mm-hmm. you know, a state congressperson, a state congress, not a national congressperson, but a state congressperson of a relatively small state. Like there's a difference there, obviously, when it comes to impact. However, what I discovered was that in fact, the Congress voted to honor her service and condemn her killing with a unanimous vote. So in June, the Congress voted unanimously to honor her service and condemn her killer. Well, apparently yesterday or this morning, they tried to do the same thing for Charlie Kirk, and 95 Democrats voted to approve it, and the rest opposed or abstained. So that 96, as I understand, if my math is right, 96 Democrats would not vote to approve honoring his legacy and condemning his assassination. And to me, that shows a meaningful step. We're willing to do this as an honor. You don't have to say, I agree with everything that the Democrat representative Hortman believed in. I don't have to believe, but it is still right to honor their service and condemn their murder. And now we have about half of the Democrats would not vote to do that, which, again, I don't know what that means. What does that mean for our nation when
right.
even this is not something that everybody can say?
I think that hypocrisy can extend to both sides, though, because I've seen other situations where someone who in some way supports. And yeah, I think the impact, like you're saying, does kind of change this conversation. But I've seen Christians respond in really alarming ways to people that are associated with the left, you know, experiencing something hard or being killed. Like, I've seen that also of like, well, you know, they had it coming. And it's like, that's not, you know, that's, I think there is that hypocrisy on either side, like a tendency towards it. But I think the difference is if you are actually,
I'm not aware of a vote.
Go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah. I'm not aware of a vote where
right.
openly
not a vote, though.
There's
yes.
a,
I'm
we
saying
refuse
more social
to
media.
Condemn the assassination of a political opponent. Like, we won't condemn that. And that's, I'm trying to imagine if there was the opposite, if Bernie Sanders was assassinated, which, by the way, that plays mm-hmm. also into the church conversation. If Bernie Sanders was assassinated, how much time should a pastor give that? Or if mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton were assassinated, how much time should a pastor give that? But I would be infuriated if the Republicans did not vote unanimously to honor her service and condemn her assassination. Like, that would be mm-hmm. absolutely intolerable that for the conservatives to do that. I was really kind of stunned by this, that you would have half mm-hmm. of the Democrats in the House approximately not willing to honor his service and condemn his assassination. That's wild to me. But again, there's always going to be people who do that. There's always going to be people who say and do stupid and idiotic things. That's the kind of the first level. Welcome to social media. But it's mm-hmm. wild to me that we've now bumped it all the way up to where officially we're not going to condemn it. And that's like the difference between, yes, there are racists and people who make racist decisions, and then now let's pass a law that's racist. Let's refuse mm-hmm. to condemn racism as a political leader's, because the political leaders are doing what they think probably is in their best interest. So they think the people they represent don't want them to do that. And that's a significant change of tone, I think. And I think that's, and then what I maybe was most amazed by in this was the, not most amazed by, the first thing that I had true was like, had I felt the move of the emotions of it was hearing Erica Kirk forgive the killer. And here's what struck me about that. I don't know if you guys have seen any of it. I've only listened to snippets and then conversations about the memorial. So personal opinion now, personal opinion only. I think she should have been the last speaker, not the second to last speaker. Because the last speaker was Donald Trump. And Trump and I think in some ways it was ingratiating in the sense that he was saying, I'm no Erica Kirk. I hate these people. And he said that, like, she doesn't hate them. She forgives them. Mm. And that's a difference between her and me. I can't pull it off. I hate them. Mm. And it was intriguing to see the difference between someone who kind of verbally, you know, tips his hat to the gospel and whether he believes it or not, you know, only he and God knows. And someone who so passionately embraces the gospel of Christ that she would say, I forgive him because it's what Christ has done for me and it's what Charlie would have wanted me to do. And then to have Trump get up and say, good for you. He said over and over again, she's a better person than I am. Like, I thought that was fascinating that he was so, she's just better and she's right. I'm wrong, but I can't pull it off. I hate them. And I was intrigued by these messages that came at the end of it. And I haven't watched the whole thing, and I do want to watch at least their two speeches. But that was intriguing to me, and I could see why that would be confusing for someone who's not really a Christian and who sees these two worlds mixing. To be like, wait, which one of them is the one who I'm supposed to look to as the example of Christianity? Like, wait, I thought they were all on the same page here, and it was apparently New York Times often is trying to pit conservatives versus Christians. They do that on purpose, but I'm sure there's an agenda there. It seems clear when I'm listening to them sometimes, but that being said, this was a big one for them. They were like, wow, the evangelical Christians kind of ran the show for the first hour. There were no political people. There was no whatever. The second hour was when all the politicians came through, and then they kind of closed out with Erica Kirk, who was the powerhouse, clearly the powerhouse there. And then they closed with Donald Trump, who was, again, like re-engaging with that message of we have an enemy now to defeat. And as a Christian, I am also intrigued. I've told people before, I'm intrigued when people who are in the secular world don't know that the scripture is being quoted. And so they're really offended by something that someone says. J.D. Vance made a reference to the fact that the government has the calling to wield. It does not wield the sword against evil for no reason. And he said that line and they were like, you know, just listen to that political language and the aggressive violence that they don't know he's quoting Romans 13. Like, they don't know that that's actually one of the mandates of government in Romans 13. But I'm used to that, I think, but it has been fascinating, but I'm very sad too, that this has happened. I'm sad for them mainly. And I'm sad for the nation. I don't know what it means that his followers have tripled since his death, allegedly tripled or quadrupled since his death. Like, I don't know.
Well, I think, and that was what I was wanting to touch on earlier. I think this is a good spot. I think it is from, and we've talked about this before. I think you're right. When it comes to like that memorial was such a good picture of like, you know, there's two aspects to this of things that he stood for. Obviously, if you read a lot of his quotes, it seems like his primary goal, his first, was his faith. And then it was the integration of his faith with politics and how his faith informed what he believed about politics. But I think why this is so challenging for people, and we've talked about this before on our podcast about politics, is I've also seen people who are more left-leaning but still very strong believers, left-leaning politically,
right,
say that this is hard because it is so integrated, like all that's the right politics and his faith. And I think there's nothing inherently wrong with that, because like we've talked about, if you are a strong believer, your faith should inform everything that you believe.
Right.
And so it will be integrated. What's difficult is, like you're saying, when other people are watching that, or when, you know, you even have an organization that is integrating those so closely. And then like this memorial, you have people who claim to be believers like Trump, who, you know, arguably don't necessarily live like believers. Maybe that's a hot take, but anyway, that becomes complicated for people who are trying to figure out, what do I do with this? Like spiritually, right, and politically, what does this mean? And I think it does. I literally just read a post from a previously really conservative friend of mine who is deconstructed. It is, now, yeah, not a believer at all. And she talked about one of the main things that turned her off from Christianity was the unhealthy integration of, like politics and Christian nationalism. And I'm not saying Charlie stood for Christian nationalism. I'm saying like the integration of,
right,
yeah,
all of these things are what drove her away from faith, because she was like, the way that some conservatives have handled things and Christian nationalism and, you know, white supremacy, she's like, she listed all of it, but
right, right,
she was like, this is the reason that I can't be a believer anymore, because this has become too conflated as the same thing. And I think that is the one thing from the memorial that I was like, this is going to be hard for people to unpack if you are not a strong believer and also super conservative politically, because of that overlap. Like that creates some tough questions sometimes, mm-hmm, I think. And I think it's amazing that so many people have come back to church because of this. I think this has lit a fire in a lot of people, which is beautiful. But if it also can create some really complicated questions for people of like, what does it mean to come to Christ? Does that mean that I'm also aligning with all these other things he stood for?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's as we have said, however many millions now it feels like times on this podcast, our construction, right. We're not constructing a faith in any humans, no mere humans, good or bad. So to me, it is always sad to hear people who have deconstructed their faith because of a third party. And you're like, you shouldn't construct your faith because of a third party. You should not deconstruct your faith because of a third party. The person you're putting, mm-hmm, faith in, no matter how great a man he is or was in Charlie Kirk or, mm-hmm, Dr. Martin Luther King or Martin Luther or Pickett, like, mm-hmm, if your faith is because of C.S. Lewis, well, C.S. Lewis would tell you, don't do that, right? Your faith is, right, in Jesus Christ. Even the Apostle Paul says, it isn't me, it isn't Apollos, it isn't Peter. You're not none of us can save you. And so that's in a cult, he would have been saying like, yeah, I'm the big man on campus. And he and Peter could have fought about it to decide who got to be the cult leader. And in the end, they both are saying, don't follow us. I am not the cornerstone, Peter is saying. Mm-hmm. Jesus is the cornerstone. Paul is saying, literally, I water, but no, only God can make things grow. So in the end, he's the only one that matters. Like, that's what I love about that. And anytime any of these people point like that, yes, I'm glad you like what I'm doing, but don't put your faith in me. If you're putting, mm-hmm, your faith in your pastor to save you, stop that. If you're putting your faith in the Pope to save you, stop that. If you're putting it in a president to save you, definitely stop that, no matter which president you mean. So this is I agree. And it is sad to me. I don't want these things integrated, but I also don't know that it's possible for faith, mm-hmm, and politics to not be somehow integrated.
Right.
Especially if you're having open conversation, because, mm-hmm, they are going to impact each other. And so I don't know that there's a cure other than to remind people fundamentally, foundationally, our faith is about Jesus Christ and the claims of his life, mm-hmm, not any of the rest, yeah, of it.
And then like we just talked about, and because if you're a believer, you can then grieve the death of someone because they're made in the image of God.
That's
right. You know, grieve the fact that they have a family and have tons and tons of people they've impacted that are all grieving. Like, you can grieve all those things. And that doesn't mean you are there for affirming everything they believe.
That's right.
But also, if you're a believer, you should be able to have those conversations and be countercultural, because even if that is gone in our country, Christians, if you're living like Jesus, you should be able to still have conversations with people that you disagree with in a kind of way. And I think that's one thing that Charlie stood for. That's like, okay, regardless of what you think politically, if you are a believer, we should be able to do those things, because that's the example that we've been set. And, you know, maybe that will shine out that version of Christianity that's actually, you know, true and like Jesus, supersedes, you know, all these politics. And like we've talked about before, that goes for both sides, like regardless of who it is that we're grieving, regardless of what they think politically and which side you fall on, if you're a follower of Jesus, you should be able to celebrate their life and the good things they stood for. And, you know, and if you disagree with some of them, well, we all disagree about things,
Right. Yeah, that is so good. And that's such a good pragmatic approach and a great note to kind of land the plane on.
Yeah.
Cause I think that's so good. And so Chris and I were connecting really quick. I'm going to read 1 Peter 3, starting in verse 14 through 16, and kind of end us on that note.
I think that'd be great. Oh, I think it's perfect.
Sweet.
Great.
Says this, "But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. Have no fear of them, nor be troubled, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect, having a good conscience, so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ may be put to shame." Thank you for joining us for this episode of Reconstructed Faith. If you enjoyed what you heard or were challenged, please leave us a review. It'll help other people find us. If you have questions or a topic you'd like to hear discussed, shoot me an email at info@southspring.org. Reconstructed Faith is a resource of South Spring Baptist Church. Remember, don't give up, trust God, search for answers.